And a lot of times in the council process, you can start at the committee level. And one committee we didn't mention was the Charter Halibut Management Committee, which is super important to the Homer area. And if you have an idea, you go to these, go to the meetings and talk to the people involved in the on the committee level. And a lot of times that's where the ideas are hatched and then brought up through the council level. And the other thing I was thinking about is just being on time with your comments is important, because a lot of times the comments are due a week or so or even longer before the meetings. So don't just think you can write a letter in the day before the meeting. It's important to keep on that schedule, and then they can be recorded in the comments. They get to the decision makers early. They can read through them. And that's one thing just to keep in mind.
Right. And Malcolm, I actually wanted to pose this to you. I mean, from a fisherman's perspective, kind of touching on what Buck was just talking about, are there things fishermen should keep in mind in order to be effective as far as their public testimony or just engaging with some of these boards and decision makers?
Yeah, thanks for the question. There's a lot, actually. The first thing I would say is be respectful and don't go up there and shout and yell and call people names, because that'll get you nowhere, I've noticed. I'd say educate yourself, learn acronyms, abbreviations and terms. There's a whole slew of, it's almost its own language when you go to these meetings. But as you educate yourself, you read the stuff and able to speak their language and understand what they're saying in the meetings, that's super important. When you're up there, make sure you're factual. Don't just spew off figures and stuff if you don't have backup for them. Cite your sources. Have information. You can cite anecdotes, but claim them as anecdotes, and don't just think because your fishing was one way that is true for the whole fleet. So you dig through the data. It's all online. You can go through all the stock assessments, the survey data. Just have backup for your information. And I'd say follow through and be persistent, because you're a lot of times not going to get it through the first time, but talk to the people in the hallways. Most people are really open and they want you to be there. I've always felt super welcomed at any meeting I've attended. And then enlisting allies is important too. When you're at the meetings, you'll find people that have a like mind or have a similar issue to you, and work with them, which is another thing of joining a fishing group too, because there's local groups, and maybe we'll touch on that a little later, but that's one way to also find some allies and people to help you move a cause forward.
Right. And we touched on this just a little bit earlier, but from your perspective, where do you go when you're trying to understand an issue? Because navigating some of these websites, navigating some of the surveys and the data can be quite complicated. I mean, how did you start understanding, I guess, you know, you put it as its own language. How did you begin to start working towards understanding a lot of these issues?
Well, it does take time. You need to go to the first meeting, you're probably way over your head, and then you just sort of get used to it is one way. But I do go back to the, even though they are hard to get through, the websites are really valuable. And then your local fishery managers, I find, are very approachable too. If you go in there, a lot of times they're busy. They don't have a whole bunch of time, but they'll give you information too. If you just ask them, that's their job, and they really want to engage the fishermen in almost all cases that I've experienced.
Okay, and I want to remind listeners, if you have a question for any of our guests, you can call 235-7721 or email info@kbbi.org, and please include your name with that so we know who is asking the question. We are going to take a quick break, and we will jump back into the coffee table in just a few minutes. You are tuned to KBBI AM 890 Homer, and you're listening to The Coffee Table. And today we are doing a Fisherman's Academy, just kind of a guide on how to get involved in the decision-making processes of fisheries. And we did have an email question from Jim Herbert, who asked, salmon are very important in Alaska. Salmon hatcheries have contributed to sport and commercial fisheries over the past 40 years, but lately there was concern that they may have a negative ecological impact, especially in wild salmon stocks. And he asked, what is the way forward to balance ecological concerns and economic, social benefits? And, you know, I feel like this is for you, Robert. And this is an issue that's going to be discussed next week in the Board of Fish's first work session on this particular issue.
It is, you know, so the hatchery issue is one of the ones that's kind of front and center for us and has been for, you know, maybe a little bit over a year now that folks have been bringing that up and feeding us a lot of really good information, you know, both from the scientific community and public's perspective of what they're seeing on the ground. So, you know, as we continue to struggle with hatcheries, I mean, that's just one of those things that we're going to have to wrestle with. And maybe to circle back to some of your earlier questions about how do people be meaningful engaged. You know, what we, the seven of us that are on the Board of Fisheries that have to make these decisions, they're often dealing with conflict. And so this is one of those cases where we have some conflicting information. And I think the best solutions are often made not by the seven of us, but when fishing organizations and concerned citizens can get together and kind of come up with some of, like, here's where we agree. That type of stuff is super helpful for us as policymakers.
And Buck, you wanted to touch on this. We were talking about this a little bit over the break, but I mean, you know, this is an issue that kind of goes outside of just the kind of a straight up fishery decision, has environmental and ecological factors involved in it.
Yeah, it certainly does. And, you know, basically getting the good science on potential impacts of hatchery fish on wild stocks and other. For other reasons, one thing I did want to mention was, as well as the Board of Fish taking up some of these hatchery issues, there it looks like there's going to be a NOAA and Senate Commerce Committee meeting that our Senator Sullivan chairs, and that will be in Anchorage on October 20th. So that I know. This isn't just a state issue. National Marine Fisheries Service is involved with some rebuilding efforts of endangered species on the Columbia and Washington, Oregon. One of their potential mitigation measures for endangered killer whales in the Puget Sound area on the West Coast is to increase hatchery Chinook production, because hatchery... Chinook salmon are a primary food source for the whales that are threatened or endangered off the west coast of Washington. So again, that all these things are at play. And the NOAA, the NIMS, National Marine Fisheries side, the federal side, is looking at many of these same hatchery issues as well. National Marine Fisheries Service has a lot of resources for research. One of the things that my council does is actually set research priorities. We see one of the most fascinating reports that we get, of many, many good reports that we get at the council every year, is our ecosystem reports from surveys they do with small mesh trawl gear in the Gulf of Alaska. Absolutely fascinating. We'll see that at our December meeting. Those small mesh trawl surveys capture small juvenile salmon. We see the presence and absence of those. We see baby black cod. We see little jellyfish. It's absolutely fascinating what, from the ecosystem perspective, what is there and not. That's down to plankton and coccolithophores and all of the small things that are in the ocean that may or may not be there. We all have a lot of concerns about the so-called ocean heat wave, the blob, so to speak, 2014-2016, where there was an absence of a lot of these, you know, primary food and primary production really failed in many ways in the Gulf of Alaska. We had an 80% cut in cod quotas that was related to that ocean heat wave. We're all concerned about, we also manage salmon bycatch in the Bering Sea in the Gulf of Alaska. Much of that, managing that bycatch is Chinook salmon. So we get an abundance of science related to, it's a hatchery issue in many ways, it's a salmon issue in many ways, but we get a lot of information about salmon at the council level.
Right, and we do have a caller on line one. Kimberly, you are on the coffee table. Go ahead with your question. Oh, it looks like we're having a... All right, Kimberly, you're on the coffee table. Go ahead with your question.
Okay, my question concerns hatcheries, specifically the one in Galkana up on the Copper River, above Copper River. I'm wondering, from what I read, that they produce both pinks and reds, and I was wondering what the procedure is. After the eggs are hatched, where do they release the fish, and is it different for the pinks than it is for the reds? Where are they actually put into the water to swim out to sea?
Alrighty, thanks for your question.
Well, I guess that would be directed at me. This is Robert. You know, I'm not 100% sure where the release site is, and I know that there's a sockeye release in Galkana, but I wasn't aware of the pink release in the Galkana fishery, and so my assumption would be that they release them up there at the hatchery site in Galkana, so that's where those fish would return to. And I do know that those, at least for the sockeyes, that those are a little earlier returning fish than the normal wild stock that we would see in Copper River.
Right, and there are two major hatchery operators in Prince William Sound, I can't remember off the top of my head. Which one does Galkana belong to? Do you remember?
I don't remember off the top of my head.
So there are two major. There's a Prince William Sound Aquaculture Association, and then I'm blanking on the.
There's the Valdez Fisheries, right. Association has a hatchery, and that's the one that the Valdez Fisheries Association, that they asked for an increase and kind of went through the normal process for that, and that. That's the one with the increase in release that really stirred a fair amount of controversy that we're addressing right now.
Right, right. And so Kimberly, if you can head over to either one of those websites, and they're actually fairly easy to navigate. They usually have a list of their hatchery locations. But then also just getting in touch with some of those folks is really helpful, and they'll be able to give you some more information on that. And Malcolm, you know, as far as a fisherman, kind of touching on this, it's not just how many fish are available to catch each year. That I know you focus on issues dealing with this hatchery issue, being involved with Cook Inlet aquaculture, and there's been some controversy here locally. But what are some issues as a fisherman that are outside or kind of in this ecological or environment arena that you're paying attention to, or that fishermen should be focused on?
Well, one thing we're always sort of lobbying for or trying to get is better science. So trying to get funding for ADF&G on the state level and for NOAA on the federal level to try to get more information. And I believe that's going to be one of the focuses of the NOAA board or the NOAA meeting up in Anchorage there. But where are the data gaps and what information do we need or are we missing right now to be able to answer these questions so that the policymakers can make their decisions? So I'd say that's one of the biggest areas that we really try to focus on, is getting the information to in the hands of the managers.
All right, and we have about 13 minutes left. We do have one caller on the line. Carl, go ahead. You're on the coffee table.
Yeah, thank you. Interesting program. Thank you, KBBI. At the international level, has the United Nations done any crop research with general ocean health issues that are becoming very prevalent on the planet right now, such as ocean acidification, the marine plastics, and other issues.
Alrighty, thanks for your question, Carl. I don't know if who wants to take that. I mean, maybe I don't know if you guys are engaged with the UN at all, but maybe are some of those issues being taken on the boards that you sit on?
Yes. So as part of our federal efforts, we have many international. We sit on many international and pay attention to many international bodies. For instance, this last meeting, the State Department participated, U.S. Department of State representative participated on ours, trying to learn more about what some of the things that we do here in Alaska. So Alaska is kind of seen as a bellwether of fisheries management for around the world, many times used as a good example of good fisheries management. I'd say that our council and our scientists are very involved with and kind of being the on the forefront of ecosystem fisheries-based management. We are using new models on climate, and of course everyone is concerned about a warming ocean, how that affects fishery stocks, how it affects the marine ecosystem, sea mammals, birds, etc. So we are constantly using those kind of forward-thinking, broader, getting away from single-species management of fish for commercial purposes and really looking at way broader processes. And I think the world, FAO, UN, et cetera, is looking at how we're doing that, and we're comparing notes is the simplest way to say it.
And Robert, you got something to add?
Sure. So I do sit as an advisory member on the North Pacific Anadromous Fish Commission. So that's another one of these bodies. It's non-regulatory in nature, but it's based on a treaty that I think was signed in the late 80s or early 90s. And it's international. It covers all the North Pacific. So the members to that treaty are the U.S., Canada, Korea, Japan, and Russia. Yeah, and so they do a lot of pretty extensive science along this, you know, both ecosystem management and trying to understand what's going on in the big deep blue sea, which is a monumental task, and you know the funding and the ability to deliver really good information is limited, but we really do rely on a lot of their reports, particularly as it relates to hatcheries, because they do track the number of fish that are released internationally, and so all of these discussions, you know, whether it's plastics or you know, sea temperatures and all those things are very much related, and we have to kind of suck all that stuff into our decision making as well.
Right, and just we have just about 10 minutes left, and there is one more topic I do want to touch on. But in general, does that board sit under a larger umbrella group, or how can the public engage with that board?
Well, so I'd say the way to get started on that one is to go look at their website, because they have a lot of really good peer reviewed literature that they publish, and just take a look at that. And it's difficult for me, even as an official advisory member, to participate in it as fully as I'd like to. I mean, the last meeting was in Russia, and it's difficult to engage in it where you're actually sitting at the table and talking to those folks, but they do a really good job of putting out some really good literature that people can base their information on. And when it's pretty helpful for us too, because as board members, we can't keep track of all this stuff. So in written public comments in particular, you know, citing, you know, a particular study that's been published by that body is pretty helpful, because it triggers a things like, oh yeah, I had to go look that up and refresh my memory on what they said about that particular topic.
Right. And so continuing on this vein of engagement and turning to you, Malcolm, you're involved in the North Pacific Fisheries Association, if I remember saying that acronym correctly. Sometimes it gets confusing between fisheries and fishery. But, you know, if you want to just kind of speak to what is that organization, and there are other fishermen organizations that help fishermen engage in some of these processes.
Yeah, thanks for that question. So it is North Pacific Fisheries Association, and it was founded in 1955. So it was actually in Seldovia. Oscar Dyson was one of the first founding members of it. And we were founded as a group that was negotiating with the processors on prices and stuff. There's some old documents showing about negotiating for 5 cents a crab, not a pound, just per crab back then. So those are kind of interesting. But we've sort of changed over the years, and right now we represent multiple gear types and multiple fisheries throughout the state. We're sort of a statewide organization. But there's also gear-specific organizations. So we have the Cook Inlet Seiners Association here in Homer, and also the Upper Cook Inlet Drift Association. So those are ones, if you're interested, to look up and get involved in. There's also the Homer Charter Association, which is super important down here, of course. And they meet a couple times a year and bring issues forward. Statewide, we have the United Fishermen of Alaska, which is a sort of a group of groups. There's all the groups throughout the state and some from Washington are involved in this large group. I think there's 30 member organizations to that, but there's also individual members. In getting on these websites and mailing lists, you get a lot of information that can be really valuable. In addition, if you're not a fisherman and just interested in some of this ecosystem information, and there's the Alaska Marine Conservation Council, and then also the Cook Inlet Keeper, or they're both involved. And then there are a couple of sport fishing groups, although actually I didn't have them listed here. And then one other nationwide one is the Seafood Harvesters of America, which is a bunch of nationwide groups that are joined together to bring some information to Washington.
Right, and they do provide information to their members, but they also do, as a group, participate in commenting on some issues. And so I guess if you want to describe, like, how is that process done, engaging with those groups that might in turn go to a meeting and comment for the group. I can think on the unguided rental boat issue that was at the MPFMC this week, this week, Longliners Association commented on that particular issue. So if you want to kind of explain how that process works within the groups.
Yeah, thanks. It differs from group to group, and I'll just explain our group is we have an elected board, which is elected in an annual meeting by the members, and that board makes decisions on the group's policies. But all members are welcome to all the board meetings, and they're able to participate and give their points of view. It's pretty rare that we have any split votes, actually. They're almost all unanimous. But some topics, for instance, IFQs, when they first were implemented, really can tear the group apart and split it, but you just try to get the biggest consensus you can and then go forward. And then other groups have executive directors, we don't, but they a lot of times take care of the actual letter writing, and then those are vetted through the board and then submitted.
Right. And we have just about 5 minutes left, but I wanted to touch on there's one thing we kind of have sort of touched on, but it's legislation done through the Alaska legislature or Congress itself. And whoever kind of wants to take this on, I mean, what is the best way, or I guess first, why don't we start with what are some of the issues those bodies are taking on in the realm of fisheries? What is their role?
Well, in the federal, basically the state and House of Representatives, we have what's kind of ongoing is the Magnuson-Stevens Act reauthorization, which has, there's a bill that's passed the House. We have Don Young sponsored that or wrote that. Senator Sullivan, because of his position on his committees, will be in charge of writing the Senate version of that. We have a very good law. There's not need for any major changes, but there's always some things that some regions of the country would like to see changed. Alaskans are very well positioned it's our representatives who are in charge of writing these versions that hopefully will become the new law. And so Alaska, there's so much about fish that in Alaska because of its importance, and with our representatives, we're in such a good position to have anyone's opinions or voices heard.
Right, and Malcolm, you had something to add to that?
Yeah, I was going to just say that almost all the elected officials have fisheries staff members it's not the only thing they do a lot of times, but it's part of their duties. So if you in the Congress or there's staff members in our local state representatives and senators, they have staff members. And so a lot of times engaging them because they're the ones that feed the information up the line. And then the most important thing, in my opinion, is to vote too. That's one way you can make your voice heard there.
And Robert, did you have something to touch on?
Well, I would just say, you know, at the state and federal level, there's a couple things that the Board of Fisheries has taken up in the past few years that, that might bear mentioning. You know, the Marine Mammal Protection Act, you know, it seems like it's been a big success in a lot of ways. So particularly in Southeast and Prince William Sound, you know, we're seeing otters and seals coming back at a level that's surprising to a lot of people and causing some concern among fishermen about the amount of success we've had with some of our marine mammals. The habitat initiative is, you know, that's super important. We got to take care of our habitat. So it's one of those things that's out there right now that kind of got away from our, the Board of Fisheries, but it's still an issue that, that we're paying close attention to.
Well, great. Well, go ahead,
Mike. Oh, just one other thing is that another huge duty of the legislatures and the elected officials is that they're the ones that appoint the people to the boards in the commissions. And so that's a big difference in how these bodies and the policies go and those things. So that's another real important reason to vote and communicate.
All right. Well, I'd like to thank all three of you for joining me. We had North Pacific Fishery Management Council member Buck Lakaitis and Alaska Board of Fisheries member Robert Ruffner and local fisherman Malcolm Milne, who also is the president of the North Pacific Fisheries Association. So I'd just like to thank you all for joining me, and you have been listening to KBBI, and this has been The Coffee Table.